Morning IELTS Supplement Sunday, July the 9th, 2017 The Absurd Effort to Make the World Over by William Graham Sumner The concept of the survival of the fittest has embodied in Darwinism captured the imagination of a new generation of social scientists after the Civil War, led by Yale sociologist William Graham Sumner, 1840 to 1910. These social Darwinists applied evolutionary theory to the operations of human society. In the following selection, Sumner invoked Darwin's ideas in order to criticize efforts by reformers to intervene in the social process. To Sumner, modern industrial development represented the natural evolution of society, and any effort to intervene in this process was therefore misguided. The burden of proof is on those who affirm that our social conditions is utterly diseased and in need of radical regeneration. My task at present, therefore, is entirely negative and critical. To examine the allegations of fact and the doctrines which are put forward to prove the correctness of diagnosis and to warrant the use of the remedies proposed. The propositions put forward by social reformers nowadays are chiefly of two kinds. There are assertions in historical form, chiefly in regard to the comparison of existing with earlier social states, which are plainly based on defective historical knowledge or at most on current stock historical dicta which are uncritical and incorrect. Writers very often assert that something never existed before because they do not know that it ever existed before, or that something is worse than ever before because they are not possessed of detailed information about what has existed before. The other class of propositions consists of dogmatic statements, which, whether true or not, are unverifiable. This class of propositions is the pest and bane of current economic and social discussion. Upon a more or less superficial view of some phenomenon, a suggestion arises which is embodied in a philosophical proposition and then promulgated as a truth. From the form and nature of such propositions, they can always be brought under the head of ethics. This word at least gives them an air of elevated sentiment and purpose, which is the only warrant they possess. It is impossible to test or verify them by any investigation or logical process whatsoever. It is therefore very difficult for anyone who feels a high responsibility for historical statements and who absolutely rejects any statement which is unverifiable to find a common platform for discussion or to join issues satisfactorily in taking the negative. When anyone asserts that the class of skilled and unskilled manual laborers of the United States is worse off now in respect to diet, clothing, lodgings, furniture, fuel, and lights, in respect to the age at which they can marry, the number of children they can provide for, the start in life in which they can give to their children, and their chances accumulating capital, than they ever have been at any former time. He makes a reckless assertion for which no facts have been offered in proof. Upon an appeal to facts, the contrary of this assertion would be clearly established. It suffices, therefore, to challenge those who are responsible for the assertion to make it good. If it is said that the employed class are under much more stringent discipline than they were 30 years ago or earlier, it is true. It is not true that there has been any qualitative change in this respect within 30 years, but it is true that a movement which began at the first settlement of the country has been advancing with constant acceleration and has become a noticeable feature within our time. This movement is the advance in the industrial organization. The first settlement was made by agriculturists, and for a long time there was scarcely any organization. There were scattered farmers, each working for himself, and some small towns with only rudimentary commerce and handicrafts. As the country has filled up, the arts and professions have been differentiated and the industrial organization has been advancing. This fact and its significance has hardly been noticed at all, but the stage of the industrial organization existed at any time, and the rate of advance in its development are absolutely controlling social facts. 9/10 of the socialistic and semi-socialistic and sentimental or ethical suggestions by which we are overwhelmed come from failure to understand the phenomena of the industrial organization and its expansion. It controls us all because we are all in it. It creates the conditions of our existence, sets the limits of our social activities, regulates the bonds of our social relations, determines our conceptions of good and evil, suggests our life philosophy, molds our inherited political institutions, and reforms the oldest and toughest customs like marriage and property. I repeat that the turmoil of heterogeneous and antagonistic social whims and speculations in which we live is due to the failure to understand what the industrial organization is and its all-pervading control over human life. While the traditions of our school of philosophy lead us to always to approach the industrial organization, not from the side of the objective study, but from that of philosophical doctrine. Hence, it is that we find that the method of measuring what we see happening by what we are called ethical standards and of proposing to attack the phenomenon by methods thence deduced is so popular. All organizations implies restriction of liberty. The gain of power is won by narrowing individual range. The methods of business in colonial days were loose and slack to an inconceivable degree. The movement of industry has been all the time toward promptitude, punctuality, and reliability. It has been attended all the way by lamentations about the good and old times, about the decline of small industries, about lost spirit of comradeship between employer and employee, about the narrowing of the interests of workmen, about his conversion into a machine or into a ware, and about industrial war. The lamentations have all had reference to unquestionable phenomena attendant on advancing organization. In all occupations, the same movement is discernible. In the learned professions, in schools, in trade, commerce, and transportation, it is to go on faster than ever. Now that the continent is filled up by the first superficial layer of population over its whole extent and the intensification of industry has begun, the great inventions both make the intention of the organization possible and make it inevitable with all its consequences, whatever they may be. I must expect to be told here, according to the current fashions of thinking, that we ought to control the development of the organization. The first instinct of the modern man is to get a law passed to forbid or prevent what in his wisdom he disapproves. A thing which is inevitable, however, is one which we cannot control. We have to make up our minds to it, adjust ourselves to it, and sit down to live with it. Its inevitableness may be disputed, in which case we must re-examine it, but if our analysis is correct, when we reach what is inevitable, we reach the end, and our regulations must apply to ourselves, not to the social facts. Now the intensification of the social organization is what gives us greater social power. It is to it that we owe our increased comfort and abundance. We are none of us ready to sacrifice this. On the contrary, we want more of it. We would not return to the colonial simplicity and the colonial exiguity if we could. If not, then we must pay the price. Our life is bounded on every side by conditions. We can have this if we will agree to submit to that. In the case of industrial power and a product, the great condition is combination of force under discipline and strict coordination. Hence, the wild language about wage slavery and capitalistic tyranny.